Wisconsin Republicans are working to pass a new school accountability bill once the next legislative session starts in January. While the draft that's circulating now isn't quite public yet, a similar bill fell short last session. Now that Republicans have a larger majority in the Wisconsin state government, this bill, as well as many other education initiatives that have failed to pass in previous sessions, are likely to be approved.
Scott Kirst is with us now to talk about this school accountability bill. He's an assistant professor of education at St. Norbert College. Scott, welcome back to Central Time.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me again.
Well, this issue of accountability, we hear it a lot at the state and national levels. What does accountability in Wisconsin schools look like now? What does it mean?
I guess the idea of accountability is that the general public, the public expects certain things out of their schools, certain things out of the public entities that they're putting together. And I think what this is a push on is that many individuals do not believe that schools are doing the job that they expect schools should do. Whether that's right or wrong, that's for the politics to determine. But really, when we talk about the idea of accountability, we talk a lot about how are we supporting our schools as well as a community? How are we accountable to the schools? I think the pushback comes from a lot of individuals believing that we're not providing the opportunities for all of the students across Wisconsin at an equal level. And so there's a little bit of a discontinuity between what some individuals believe accountability really means.
And in a lot of usages, it seems like it means a carrot and stick approach. All right, the school works well. We want to reward it in some way. The school is performing poorly. We want to punish it and or provide alternatives.
Exactly. And that's, I think, one of the things that Governor Walker is pushing forward is that he wants to create an entity in the Department of Public Instruction to actually say what are the criteria that we're able to give the carrots to and what are the criteria that we're going to be not be giving the carrots to, which is a little counterintuitive. You would almost think that the schools that have the most issues are the ones that need the most support and the most attention.
Well, the idea, I guess, would be that maybe these schools aren't managed well or something like that. There's something wrong, not in the community, not in community support, but structurally within the school that needs to change. So how can the state, or in this case, the DPI, incentivize, to use the economics word, that kind of change?
Mm-hmm. And I guess there already are mechanisms in place now to fix that. You can always have a different school board members. You can actually be pressuring. The community really should be involved in determining what is wrong with these schools. We're kind of taking it away from that community action and putting it more in the legislature and the DPI, where they might not actually have a close enough view or almost a personal view about that community school. I know a lot of places that are, there's a lot of issues that are at some schools, and the local community is the one that says, hey, we need to fix that. We're the ones that they're very proud of their schools. So there are mechanisms in place not only to fix schools, but fix, the quote unquote bad teachers. I'm not sure why this carrot and stick approach is needed.
Now, as we mentioned, this bill, isn't in full form mm-hmm. in the public yet, but it's expected to be close, and lawmakers seem to have suggested that it's going to be close to a bill that had passed, or not passed, I'm sorry, in previous okay. sessions because of closer margins and some Republicans not being on board. What do we know about that bill that didn't pass?
The one that didn't pass, a lot of the push against that was the idea of testing the private schools with the vouchers. That, if we are expecting our taxpayer money to go to these private schools, they should be held accountable at the same level as the public schools. And a lot of proponents were pushing, saying, listen, we really need to make sure that, without that, it's difficult to actually compare apples to apples, as we're talking about. So now there's a little bit more support saying, okay, well, what if, and, there's a lot of ideas floated out there. What if we have different tests? What if we have different measurements? Can we correlate those together? So I think this bill that's coming up, it's trying to circumvent some of those problems that they had last time about the accountability of the private schools.
But it would still be a different test potentially for these choice schools, but maybe it's a matter of comparing, Red Delicious to Jonagold apples or something, not apples and
right.
oranges here.
Exactly. And those are the things that we have to look at. I mean, when we talk about college and career ready, what is a good measure of that? And really, when you look at the assessments that we have out there, the standardized testing we have out there. Sometimes the big question is, are these really testing what we want our students to have out? And philosophically, is this the only measure that we should use? It's very easy for us to take a look at one school and say, that's a 168. And we take another school and we say, oh, that's a 172. And so therefore, I'm going to send my kids to 172. But if we don't understand what those numbers mean, it really is not, it's not a good way to compare the apples to apples.
We're talking to education expert Scott Kirst about a new school accountability bill Wisconsin Republicans are hoping to pass early in the next legislative session.
What do you think of this school accountability bill? To what standard do you think Wisconsin schools should be held, and why? Is it fair to compare public and private schools against the same standards? You can call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Ricker. We're continuing our conversation with education expert Scott Kirst about a new school accountability bill here in Wisconsin.
Republicans in the legislature hope to pass that bill early in the next session. We're taking your calls now. How do you think we should measure the success or lack thereof of schools here in Wisconsin? Should schools be rewarded or punished for their performance? If so, how do you think that should work? Is it fair to compare public and private schools, choice schools, using different testing standards? Teachers and principals, what do you think about how Republicans want to hold your schools accountable? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go right to a caller. We've got Brian on the line in Madison. Brian, hi.
Hi. Our schools have the problem that they are structured on age cohorts, and kids develop at differential speeds and differential areas in their brains is one factor. And our accountability has traditionally been based on standardized pencil and paper tests, and many kids do not perform well in this particular medium. We have to provide for a variety of means of assessment. We have to, for all children, give a base level assessment of where the child is before the administration of instruction, and then measure the school by the progress the child makes from where they are, and not make assumptions that because a child is at X grade level, he should be at that particular level in any given particular topic. And this is the problem with all the accountability schemes that I've heard, is they don't allow for these different variables.
Brian, thanks a lot for the call. He brings up a lot and a lot of the concerns that people have, Scott, about accountability and, in particular, how you measure a school's performance and a child's performance.
And he makes an excellent point that we actually do. You know, we assume at a certain age every student meets all those milestones. And that's why it's so important to have the teacher know their students and support their students, so that they're the ones that are able to identify where they are, what instruction will bring them to an elevated level of learning, and then assess them there. And that's really what, you know, teacher preparation programs and teacher training programs and teacher professional development, that's really what we look at, that differentiation. Standardized testing could put a damper on that, because that standardized testing could be time in which we're actually getting to know our students one-on-one rather than just as a number.
Okay, but as a state policymaker, you want to have something to use to be able to look at a glance and see these schools are doing well, these are doing worse, and those more subjective types of evaluation may not cut the mustard. They may not provide you with any kind of information you can use.
And that's a great point. And I'm not saying that that's the only assessment you should be using. But we should also not use just standardized testing as the metric that we're looking for. It's a very complex process to evaluate where a student is, where a school is, where a community is. And I think boiling it down to a number is too easy. But it gives you no valid data. It just tells you you are 172 and somebody else is 168.
Back to our callers. We've got Arnold on the line in Verona. Arnold, hi.
Well, I think the discussion is misplaced. There's no exit exam. There's no exams for a diploma. There's no accountability comparatively in any district for all the money that's spent. There's no way to measure improvement. There's no entrance exams to any of the tech schools or universities. And there's a very high percentage of people who, when entering the secondary level or post-secondary level, had to take remedial courses, which merely substantiates the failure of K-12 to begin with. So until you get some standards for graduation and diplomas, people are just talking about a mother's ideas. Just a waste of time, everyone.
Arnold, thanks a lot for the call. So he'd like to see evaluation in the form of exit exams, graduation exams to get out of high school, Scott.
Very interesting. Again, that's going to be something that we would have to identify what are the skills. And if you ask 20 people what are the knowledge, skills, and dispositions a student should have at the end of 12th grade, you're going to get 20 different questions. So it all goes back even to the Common Core arguments that about throwing them out right now. No one can agree on those standards. No one can tell you what somebody should be when they're done with that 12th grade. Things are moving. The Common Core standards, we have those in place. Are they perfect? Of course not. But it's a start. It's a way to get moving. It's a way to have this dialogue. And perhaps something like that, when somebody gets, this whole idea of an exit exam, well, once we're understanding what we really do want from community members when they're 18, 19 years old, well, that'll be something good that we can pursue then.
Thanks for that call, Arnold. We'll go to Jake in Sheboygan. Jake, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I guess 2 points. One that concerns me is special education students and how they're involved in all this. Obviously, private schools have different rules to play under when accepting, rejecting, and educating special ed students. So even if the tests were the same, I'm not sure that we'd be testing apples to apples because of that. And the second thing, when this bill was first introduced last year, it had a lot to do with charter schools and being able to replicate and things of that nature. And I'm interested to get your feelings on how that is going to be used as a stick.
Thanks, Jake, for the call. So, Scott, to his first point about, he says the choice schools, private schools, aren't required to take special ed students. So that creates an imbalance in the evaluation department. Comparing public schools to the other schools.
That's absolutely correct. And most private schools do not have the resources nor the expertise in the teachers to actually accommodate the needs of special needs students. So, yeah, that is something that we'd have to take a look at, that, if I were to use a business analogy, if I could choose the raw materials that put into my product, my product may be superior to others because I know where my raw materials are coming from. Same thing with students. If you can just pick and choose, I don't know if we can compare that, somebody who's just picking and choosing the students they're accepting.
We heard from John on Facebook who says, rip away unprecedented amounts of funding, watch unprecedented low morale create early retirement and job seeking, and then try to toughen standards? Will there be any accountability, he asks, for all the new publicly funded private schools they want to create an increase in other legislation? There's a good chance that we'll see more kids able to go into choice schools. So he's worried that there's not going to be enough accountability. It'll be, I guess, NERF accountability for the choice schools.
And yes, that's absolutely true. I think many people start with the position that private schools, by de facto argument, are superior than public schools. And they say, well, if we can just get everyone in a private or a choice school, then everybody will improve. But when you really look at the facts and the research, you'd be hard-pressed to find a lot of data that says that they are better in any way than public schools. In fact, in some ways, they can be worse.
Now, getting back to the idea of sanctions on failing schools, the bill was this draft of the school accountability bill was authored by Senator Paul Farrow. And he says he didn't put sanctions for failing schools into the bill. As you mentioned earlier, he wanted to create a committee under the Department of Public Instruction to decide what to do. Are you surprised at that they didn't want to specify sanctions, that they put this into the hands of the DPI?
Well, and I think the issue is that they don't want to show all the cards that they have out right now. The problem is with the DPI. The DPI is a state entity. There has been some push to make that the superintendent an appointed rather than an elected position. So, a lot of these structures, if they're in place, they can make things very difficult for school districts very quickly if the politics and the changes happen in our government.
And getting to the voucher students here, as I mentioned, looking at lifting the cap currently set at 1,000 mm-hmm. students and either having a higher number or no maximum number, what kind of effect would a higher cap have on education in Wisconsin?
Well, I think, like you said it before, you would have a lot of students obviously going to these choice or voucher schools. And the problem is we start talking about what is left. What students do we have that maybe don't have the ability to be transported to these choice schools? Or what if these ones, you know, the ones where they just can't afford all those things? We start talking about how we're going to kind of get a class structure almost between these schools. You have the schools of the haves and the schools of the have-nots. And unfortunately, the have-nots could be our public school system.
Scott, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
That's Scott Kirst, Assistant Professor of Education at St. Norbert College. He was with us to talk about a new school accountability bill. Wisconsin Republicans in the legislature are planning to pass early in the next session.